grab an outline. If anybody needs an outline, there's probably some on these first two or three seats up here where no one's sitting. Romans, we're in chapter 2. Be looking at verses 12 through 29. A couple weeks ago, I covered the last half or so of Romans chapter 1. And Paul had told us he was ready to bring the gospel. And we talked about how that the gospel, or good news, implies that there is a possibility of bad news. And Paul tells us in Romans chapter 1 what that bad news was. It's because God's judgment, God's wrath, is being displayed from heaven upon mankind, sinful mankind. We're up to the middle of chapter 2. Let's read our text this morning to begin with, beginning in verse 12. Paul says, "For as many as have sinned without law shall also perish without law. And as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these, having not the law, are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing, or else excusing one another, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to my gospel. Behold, thou art called a Jew, and restest in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest the will, his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which hast the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, do you steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. For circumcision verily profiteth if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge you, who by the letter and circumcision dost transgress the law? For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly. Neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God." Lots of terms there, isn't it? To try to keep straight. If you have an outline, if you look on the back of the outline, you'll see some line graphs. They're color-coded. You notice that? Stayed up all night coloring each one of them individually. Hey. If you go through the book of Romans, remember when we did Obadiah, I told you you could read through the book of Obadiah in 3 minutes. You can read through the book of Romans in about 45. And if you read through it, here's what you will find. Paul is making a reasonable defense and explanation of the gospel and the relationship between the gospel and God and man. And it's a reasoned approach that Paul has given. And he makes use of several things. One of them is questions. And you'll see the number 88. There are 88 questions asked in the book of Romans. In 16 chapters, that's over five per chapter. That's a lot of questions. Old Testament quotes. Paul quotes from the Old Testament 45 times. And so you can see that. Now, notice down below, the bottom, across the bottom, the horizontal axis on your graph is the chapter numbers, 1 to 16. And then the vertical axis is the number of times each of these things is there. So, for instance, you can see in chapter 3, the blue is questions. There are 17 questions asked in chapter 3. Everybody see how to read the graph? All right. Old Testament quotes, you see I've got marked. Old Testament persons, you can see I've got marked. There are 15 different Old Testament persons, a total of 35 times. So some of them are named more than once. Abraham is by far the most common. Yellow is New Testament persons, not including the Apostle Paul. There are 35 New Testament persons. You'll notice they are all in chapter 16. Then you've got references to the Gentiles, 42 references. And these are not all the word Gentile. There are other words that Paul uses, but he's referring to Gentiles. Now I've got some of those listed, maybe all of them. Greeks, barbarians, the uncircumcision, we just read that in our text this morning. Without law, we saw that in our text this morning. Not my people, or not beloved. All right, so here is some ways that Paul refers to the Gentiles. Then you see the same thing with Jews. He refers to Jews 50 times with these nine means of referring to the Jews. Those in the law, the circumcision, my kinsmen, those of the law, them that know the law, Israel or Israelites, the seed of Abraham, children of the flesh, or his people. Now, I tell you all that, and it'd be a good idea if you just stick this in your Bible, because we're going to be coming back to it, you know, maybe 2 months from now or whatever, and looking at it. But it gives you some insight as to the things that Paul uses as he makes his argument in the book of Romans. And questions, and we're going to look at questions this morning, so I want to kind of pinpoint a little bit, because Paul uses questions a lot. And Paul, as he goes through the book of Romans, you're going to see this four or five times, where he will anticipate a question that someone may ask. He's just went through explaining something, and he knows the objection that's going to be raised. And he anticipates that objection and formulates it in a question. We'll be seeing that this morning and as time goes on. But you'll notice the three things that primarily Paul uses to present his argument are questions, Old Testament quotes, and Old Testament persons, and Jews and Gentiles to some extent. But you'll notice the heavy part of Paul's argument is found from the last half of chapter 1 through chapter 11. And you can look on the graph and just see at a glance that these chapters are heavily loaded with these things, particularly questions. All right, so we're going to get into that. A quick review. Here's the things that we've learned so far. That God has revealed Himself to all men who understand by this general revelation that God exists and that they are accountable to Him. We saw that in Romans chapter 1, 18 through 32. God has revealed certain things about Himself to everyone, and that revelation is enough that everyone knows that God exists. There are no atheists. Everyone knows God exists. And they also know that they are responsible to respond to Him in an appropriate way. Second thing we notice, that all men, by nature, despise this revelation. And they suppress it. They push it down. They try to hide it. They try to change it. They try to change the definition and the attributes of God into something that they can live with, something that will not condemn them for the way that they want to live. We saw that God's judgment is upon the earth even now. God's judgment is seen in the world, and often in increasing degrees. And we saw also in the last half of Romans chapter 1 that if God were to remove all restraints from men, allowing them to do whatever it is they want to do, then quickly evil and horror would fill this world. Now Paul anticipates our reaction to what he's just said. I look at those verses, and we saw there was a list of things there that we went through that list of sins. We all found ourselves in that list somewhere before we got to the end of it. But I look at that list and I think, whew, I'm not that bad. You see things like that on the news and that, but I look out at you and I don't, this group of people doesn't remind me of Romans 1. So how does that work its way out? A quick answer is this, that you and I have a watered down sense of righteousness. Let me give you an example of that. When I was, and here's the example I'm going to give you, just on the one sin of lying. Okay? You can tell the truth and still be guilty of lying. You can state true facts and still be guilty of lying. Every kid learns how to do that. By the time I was 17 years old, I was a master at it. Let me give you an example. In Heber Springs, there used to be a Gibson's Discount Center. Everybody remember that? All right, it was sort of a souped-up Dollar General, but not near as souped up as Walmart. Okay, and it was located where Stage is, that strip mall, except it wasn't near that big. It was about a third of that size. Well, it was there, and it was the only store like that in town. So, you know, that was the Walmart of its day. Well, I was 17. I was driving, and my buddy lived down the street from me, and every day he'd come over to my house, and we'd shoot basketball. But most every day, or quite often, there was some mischief we wanted to get into. And it was mischief that I didn't want to do around my mom. You know, she wouldn't like my mischief. And so we need to go somewhere. Get out of there. Get away from the house. So I would tell my mom, you know, I wouldn't ask my mom. My dad worked out of town, so that plays into this. I wouldn't ask my mom, "Mom, can I go to Gibson's?" I'd tell her, "I'm running to Gibson's." Now, what's the difference between asking her and telling her? I wasn't telling her in a harsh way, but she's a little less likely to challenge me if I state it as a fact. If I ask her, "Do you care if I go to Gibson's?" I'm leaving open the door for her to easily say no. So I tell her, "We're running to Gibson's." So, you know, usually she would cave in, so we'd leave. We weren't going to Gibson's. But here's what I did. I went to Gibson's. I went to Gibson's for about 2 minutes so I could tell my conscience I wasn't lying. Okay? 95% of our time was not spent at Gibson's. I just went in one door and out the other, so if she asked me, "Did you go to Gibson's?" I could say, "Yeah, I went to Gibson's." So I could feel good about telling her I'm going to Gibson's. Now, I'll tell you, that's lying. That's lying. I knew I was lying when I told her that. Because when she asks me, where are you going? Here's what she's really asking. Where exactly are you going? What exactly are you going to be doing? Is there anything you're going to be doing or any place you're going to be going that I need to know about that I might would disapprove of? That's what she's really asking me with those four words, where are you going? And I knew that's what she's asking. So even though I told the words I stated were true, they were a lie. It was a lie. I was presenting something as being true when it was far from the truth. I told myself I wasn't lying, but deep inside, I knew I was. I knew I was being dishonest. And had she known where we went, in fact, she didn't have to know. She knew we weren't going to Gibson's for 2 hours. All right? She knew I was lying. She felt that she was being lied to. And I felt I was being lied, that I was lying. And if God himself had come and looked at me, he would have said, you're lying. You are guilty of lying. Now, I look at Romans 1 and I say, I'm not that bad. I don't do all those things. And this is what John talked about last week. You who condemn that person, you look at those people in Romans 1 and you think, golly, I would never do such a thing. He says, you do the same thing. You're guilty of sin just as they were guilty of sin. And in last week in, there's 9 questions in Romans chapter 2. Last week, 2 of them were in John's text. Look at on their outlines. Question number 1. You who condemn other sinners and yet ignore your own sin, do you think you will escape the judgment of God? What answer is Paul expecting? No. No, you're not. You may look at people who are evil and wicked and outwardly they're more evil than you are. Do you think you can look at them and judge them and think that you will not experience God's judgment? No. Question number 2, are you so used, and this is important, are you so used to God's goodness and God's patience and God's long-suffering and God's mercy, which we all experience day after day after day after day? Are we so used to that that we don't? It doesn't dawn on us that God gives it to us to lead you to repentance. That's the way we live. That's where we're at. Many people, in John's message last week, he honed in on the Jews, because we're getting to talk about the Jews for a minute. They think that they have a special understanding with God. They have a special relationship with God. It might be the Jews in our text in Romans. It might be you or us in our society because grandma took us to church or because we say the blessing at meals. And we think that we've got this special connection with God that he kind of winks and looks the other way at some of our casual sins. I remember years ago, I may have shared this with you. We were on a job working, and Jim Benkert, which some of you, most of you probably know Jim, was working with me at the time, and we were there working. The plumber was there. And the plumber was a loud, could be vulgar guy. Mouthy, he was talk nonstop, and you know, the type of person that after about 2 minutes I've had enough of being around him. You know, I just need to go away or tell them to go away or something. And somehow we got off on talking about church and talking about God. And he popped up, said, you know, me and God have this understanding. And Jim popped up and said, no, you just think you and God have this understanding. And I'm over there going, tell him, Jim. You know, I didn't say it outwardly, but I was cheering him on. You know what happened? It got quiet. No one said anything for about, it seemed like forever. It was probably just a minute or two. And I knew that guy was digesting what Jim had said. I don't know what effect it had, but if you see that guy today, he's a changed guy. He's still boisterous, but it's telling people about Jesus. I don't know when or where or why, but he's a different man. So that brings us to our text. We say we're not this bad. God says you might ought to check inside. And then we come to our text for today. And here's my first point. You may never see. You can live your whole life and never see the law of God or the law of Moses in the Old Testament. You may live your whole life and never see this book. And still be condemned to hell. Did you catch that? You can live your whole life, never understand the law of Moses in the Scriptures, or even see or hear a Bible, and yet be condemned to hell. Look what it says in verse 12. For as many as have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law. How is that? That someone can live their whole life, never hear of the Bible, and still perish as a sinner? It's because they have, what we talked about in 2 weeks ago, general revelation. They know enough about God. God may not have shown them the Scriptures. They may have never heard the gospel. But they know enough about God to know that they are responsible to Him. That general revelation that everyone sees in nature is not enough to save you. But it is enough to condemn you. Is that hard? Is that hard to grasp? Is that hard to accept? We see enough about God in nature to know that we are accountable to turn to Him, to worship Him, to seek Him out. Number two, you can violate the law in one point and be condemned to hell. Notice what he says in, I'm going to read verse 12 and 13. For as many as have sinned without the law shall also perish without the law. And as many have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. So it doesn't matter if you got law or not, you're still going to be judged. Okay? Notice verse 13. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. Now here this gives us a qualification to be justified. And what is it? Doing the law. You might say, well, I thought we didn't believe in salvation by works. We don't. But if you can do the law, you will be saved. There's only one problem with that, though, isn't there? When do you want to start? Okay, it's too late to start, but let's say we'll give you a second chance. How long do you think you'll last? Not very long. Okay, righteousness is the accepted means of salvation. You'll tell us that in two or three other ways in this text. Now here's the thing. In James, the book of James, chapter 2, verse 10, Paul says, if we keep the whole law, yet offend in one point, you're guilty of all. You only have to sin one time to be guilty of breaking the law, of not keeping the law. This verse doesn't say the doers of the law for the most part. Okay? If I were to ask you, have you kept the law? Think of how you would answer. And I'm not going to ask you, but here's what I suspect I would hear. I try to. Sometimes I do. I haven't. Not perfectly, no. You think God's going to grade us on a curve? No. You may hope, but you hope wrong. Okay? You hope wrong. When I was in college, I was in a engineering class, and in every class I was ever in, you would hear this conversation among the students. I wonder if Professor so-and-so grades on a curve. Well, I was in this class, and there was a student in the class who made 100 on every test except the first one that they made an 86 on it. 100 on every other test in that class. The curve was set. Okay, there was no, yeah, I know, they kind of looked down their nose at this guy, or with disdain, you know, why can't you miss something sometime, you know, to help us all out, all right? That's the way righteousness is. There is a standard. The standard is perfection. If you want to be saved by works, you have to live perfectly. Number 3, verse 16, your secrets will be judged. It says, in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ. You know, it's one thing for you to see my sin. But I can tell you, you don't see them all. Thank God you don't see them all. Thank God you can't read my mind. And you're glad that it's the other way too, aren't you? But God knows. God knows not just your evil deeds, but your evil thoughts, your selfish thoughts, your motives. Number 4. Being a Jew, even a zealous one, will not excuse your sin. Now think of, from here to the rest of the message this morning, think of the word Jew in the sense that the Jews were God's chosen people. God chose the Jews for particular reasons, which we may not know them all, or the extent of them, or the fullness of them. But God chose that people, that nation, to work His plans, a lot of His plans and decrees, through. And they were, I won't use the word proud, but they were viewed themselves as special. And I can understand that, can't you? God chose us. I'm a Jew. And notice what he says here in verse 17. He says, you're called a Jew, and this is a national Jew. And you rest in the law, or you put your trust in the things God has provided for you. And he says, and you make your boast of God. He is our God. Sure, we would boast about the Lord who has chosen us. Now notice the things that he says. You know his will. How do they know his will? The Old Testament. You approve the things that are more excellent. You acknowledge right things. You acknowledge the righteous things of God's law and of God's revelation. These are good, aren't they? What in the world is it? You are being instructed out of the law. You're confident that you yourself are a guide to the blind. You have confidence in the things that God has given you, that you could, you're confident you could point the Gentiles or anyone else to the way of to God. You are a light. You look at yourself. You look at your nation as being a light to those who are in darkness. You look at yourself as being an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes. You have the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. So he asks them a question. And here we've got, of the nine questions in this book, we've got questions 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. What are the answers that Paul is leading them to acknowledge? He says in verse 21, "Therefore, you who teach others, do you not teach yourself?" What answer are they expected to give? No. You that teach others, do you not teach yourselves how to behave, how to live? Not good enough. Not good enough. You that preachest that a man should not steal, do you steal? Yeah. We're guilty. You that sayest a man should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? The answer is yes. And we may not all fit every one of these. And the idea is not that Paul is giving us an exhaustive list. He's given us an example of a list of things that we ought to be able to see. I may not fit that one, but I fit enough. All right? I may have got away with that one. May not have had the opportunity. Okay? But there's enough chance things I did have opportunity that I failed. I get your point. You that hate idols, do you worship idols? You that boast of the law and boast of your ability to keep the law, do you, through breaking the law, bring dishonor to God? You are Jews. You are God's chosen people, and yet God's name is blasphemed among the nations around you because of your behavior. They do not respect your God because of your life. Paul said, just because you're a Jew, just because you're a national Jew, God will not excuse your sin. There is no special treatment for Jewish people. Then we come to number 5. A righteous, notice this is in quotes, a righteous Gentile will be justified. A sinning Jew will not. Now let's read these verses. And we're going to have to work around some of these terms. Notice what he says in verse 25. For circumcision truly profits if you keep the law. Now change out the word circumcision, because this is just a word that he is using to name Jews, and to name their, I don't want to say rituals, to name their religious practices. So he says, being a Jew would bring you profit. Keeping the Jewish law would bring you profit if you kept the law. But if you are a breaker of the law, if you break the law, then your rituals, your practices, your circumcision, your national heritage just makes you just like a Gentile. Your circumcision is counted as uncircumcision. It's made uncircumcision. It's made your Jewishness has lost its power. It's lost its effect. It has done you no good if you don't keep the law. Verse 26, therefore, if the uncircumcision, or if the Gentiles keep the righteousness of the law. Okay, does it say they do it? No. This is just a hypothetical situation. If the Gentiles keep the righteousness of the law, would not his uncircumcision, or the fact that he's a Gentile, be counted for circumcision? In other words, if there is a Gentile out there who keeps the righteousness of the law, wouldn't God have the effect of choosing him, receiving him, accepting him? Okay, here's some questions. Look at these questions. What answer is Paul expecting? If a Gentile keeps the righteousness of the law, wouldn't that be enough to be counted as a Jew? What answer is he expecting? Yes. That's what he's expecting. We can't get away from that. That's what he's expecting. Question number 8. Won't the Gentile who fulfills the law, let's read the next verse, and shall not uncircumcision, or shall not being a Gentile, which is by nature, if it fulfills the law, judge you who by the letter and circumcision does transgress the law? So here's the question that he's asking. Question number 9. Won't the Gentile who fulfills the law judge the Jews who do not keep the law? What answer is he leading you to? Yes. Now that sounds an awful lot like Paul is saying, you will be saved by keeping the law, doesn't it? That's what it says. The doers of the law shall be justified. Keeping the righteousness of the law, you will be accounted as God's chosen people. You fulfill the law. But here's the kicker, and John will get into this next week, but I've got to tell you anyway, all right? That would be true if anyone ever succeeded in doing it. Just like in our Defending Your Faith videos, y'all remember when back there goes R.C. said, somebody always asks, what about the innocent native in Africa? And he said, if the innocent native in Africa will go straight to heaven, he won't have to go past go, he won't collect $200, he goes straight to heaven. And you know, you're kind of caught back a little bit. And he said that the thing is, there are no innocent natives in Africa. But if someone were truly innocent, they don't need salvation. They don't need to be saved. Okay, it's kind of the same thing, except coming at it from a different perspective. If you can keep the law perfectly, you don't need to be saved. Paul says there is an element of your salvation that is you are saved by righteousness. And we're going to find out in 2 or 3 weeks a little more about that righteousness. But what he leaves us with today is this, that man is sinful, man is evil. If God were to let you do whatever you wanted to do, it would not be pretty. The fact that you're a Jew doesn't mean squat. It doesn't help you a bit. The fact that you've been in church all your life doesn't account for anything as far as salvation. So, come to the last point, evidence. that you are a Jew. Now remember, we're using that you are, remember the evidence that you are chosen by God, that you are a spiritual Jew. Evidence that you are a Jew is seen in the heart. Notice the last two verses. He says, for he is not a Jew. Okay? He is not God's chosen person. He is not chosen of God. He is not a Jew, which is one outwardly. Sure, there are a lot of outward Jews that God chose, and all of this is on the outside. But it is a picture of what could happen or will happen on the inside. He is not a Jew. Spiritually speaking, he is not chosen by God, who is just one on the outside. Neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh. But, here's the contrast, he is a Jew. Here's how you know a person is a Jew, a spiritual Jew, which is one inwardly. Circumcision is that of the heart. It is in your spirit. It is not in the letter. It is not on the outside. Real circumcision, spiritual circumcision, is not outside. It is inside. Being a Jew is not something outside. It is inside. The evidence that we are spiritual Jews is not seen because of something outwardly that we do. It is seen by something that has happened inside our hearts. Now, he's been talking to Jews. The Jews thought they had a leg up on everybody else because they were God's chosen people. And so Paul tells them, doesn't mean that much. The Gentile keeps the law and you do not. Guess who God approves of? The Gentile. Paul anticipates their objection. Paul anticipates what they're going to say next. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. If that's the case, Paul, what advantage is it to being a Jew? Paul anticipates their objection, and he'll answer that question starting next week. It's the same with us. You know, and you don't, the application doesn't have to be Jew. Is there an advantage to raising your children in church? Is there an advantage to your children being raised in a Christian home? I hope so. It is. There is an advantage. But that advantage doesn't save them. So, bad news gets worse, doesn't it? Not only are we evil, but there's nothing special about us that God would tend to like about you and me, not in and of ourselves. Let's pray. Father, would you help us to grasp these things? God, I pray you'd help us to see our nature as it is. God, we are so prone to want to fix ourselves. Not really fix it, but do just enough to get by. God, we look at our sin and convince ourselves that it's not as bad as you say it is. And we look at you and we experience your grace and your mercy continually. And we look at you and we water down your justice. We think you're perhaps not as serious about judging sin as the scriptures say. God, help us to get a good grasp on ourselves, who we are, what we are really like, what we are really capable of. God, as the weeks and months go by, God, may we learn to value your grace. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.